and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Egdon, and my guest tonight is Brandon Beck of Crunch Wears No Pants. Brandon, how you doing?
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I'm doing good. Wolves just laid one on the Pelicans. We needed that.
Definitely needed that. Did not want to be recording this pod. Last time me and Leo did a pod, we did it after that Indiana game, and we were crabby as hell after that one. Maybe a bit over the top, maybe, but also that was a frustrating one. But glad to halfway through like the second half was kind of mentally checked out on it. Thank God.
Yes, I agree.
Well, they broke their two-game losing streak. Two very frustrating games. Lost to the Pelicans, on Wednesday, which was just, it was close the entire second half. Like the Indiana game where they go down early and have to claw back and come up short. This one was kind of the opposite, where they took an early lead and weren't able to finish it out at the end. We'll kind of go over later in the pod some of the clutch time stuff. But before we really dive into the meat of the recent Wolves games, I just wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself to our listeners, the podcast you guys got. And whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Brandon. I am one of the three hosts of Crunch Wears No Pants, me, Jordan Almat, and Nate Alsdorf. Just three buddies from college, really, who all love the Wolves and try to kind of have more of like a fan perspective thing. We do a little bit of like analytics-y talk, a little bit of like by the numbers stuff, but for the most part, we're really into like the weird Wolves history and stuff like that. I'm glad you had me.
Yeah, glad to have you on. I know I listen to you guys a good amount, and I enjoy the fan. I'm a fan too, obviously, but the unbiased, unapologetic fan stuff is really fun.
I appreciate it.
One thing I remember earlier in the season that was I was almost like jealous of you guys after Britt had the. what was it?
That was the Mike Conley's rep suddenly ain't what it used to be after that splayed airball cum assist.
Cum assist, yes. And you guys had him on what I think was the next day.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, that's fantastic. That is amazing.
Yeah, so all the credit on that one goes to Jordan. He runs our pod account for the most part. And he jumped right on that and was like, this is exactly our brand. We need to take advantage of this. Responded to him, and Britt responded to our tweet. And then Jordan immediately just hopped in his DMs, and he was like, Britt, we got to have you on to talk about the tweet. We promise we'll keep it to a couple minutes. We'll talk some real basketball. And yeah, it was great. Britt is fantastic. Britt is our goat. So
yeah, listening to your pod and listening to Britt on the surface, it seems like, oh, brands don't vibe. No, you got it. It fits exactly to me.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I think the thing that we like to do on our show, like, I think that it's kind of fun when we have guests to kind of have the guests like get out of their comfort zone a little bit. Like, Britt's on Dane's pod once a week, and it's like heavy, heavy hoops talk. And Dane's never going to ask him about like a splayed airball cum assist. Or like, last year we had Dane on. And we did like kind of like our standard hot seat questions, and it ended up coming out that like when Dane was in high school, he sold a massage chair to Theo Ratliff. So we love getting like those weird insights that you're just never going to get on like the Dane pod or Johnny K or anything like that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, unfortunately for me, I have not sold any equipment to anyone, but certainly not any Wolves players. Well, that's great. Everyone over here should listen to you guys. It's fantastic. The other thing I just want to kind of get some the backstory on the goosebumps. So that's been a social media thing for you guys, and Grady shouts it out on the broadcast, and then I think Tygie on Dane's pod as well kind of shouted you guys out. So yeah. Give a little backstory on the goosebumps of it all, and then just kind of what you guys experienced there with the shout outs.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, like the goosebumps thing in the last like couple of weeks has really like, taken on a life of its own. We were talking a little bit before we started recording here, like the backstory behind Julius Randle Goosebumps isn't honestly anything super special. Like Jordan has the weirdest Instagram feed of anyone I know. And he just stumbled across that video of that girl playing the trombone with Goosebumps. And Julius Randle, this was after the Kings game, the second game of the season. So like it's been a full season long thing. And he just like combined it together and was like, this is what it feels like to be a Julius Randle bully ball enjoyer. And he posted the video and it went a little like viral the first time. And then Durf and I were like, this is the best thing Jordan has ever created. And so we've just been like promoting the hell out of it every time Julius Randle had a good game. And so, yeah, it kind of died down in the middle of the season when Julius Randle was kind of public enemy number one. And then he got hurt. And so like, it was kind of like dormant during that period as well. But then he came back and he played really well. They won, I think 11 or 12 in a row that he played in. And people started really coming around on him, and the Julius Randle Goosebumps video became like a bigger and bigger thing. And yeah, we'd like to have Grady on to talk to him about it and just kind of see like how does he like pick out the things? Like he's a super active Wolves like Twitter and Blue Sky user. So like, what is he doing like when he's picking out these things? And is he like, does he have a notebook of references he wants to make? Like I'd love to know that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. He had on Jaden's big dunk tonight. He had a slim slam. That was a pretty good one. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I was gonna ask you the Randle of it all. When he was in, like you mentioned, the public enemy number one, and he was playing objectively pretty poor up until about, I don't know, halfway through the season. I don't know. Did you guys feel like, uh-oh, we're the Julius Randle pod? We're in trouble here, or?
No, not really. I've always like through most of the season. Like you said, he at the beginning of the season objectively was not playing like super well. But I've always been kind of trying to like vocalize that I think like the nature of how he showed up here, he has kind of received an outsized like amount of vitriol from the fan base. Like he didn't play well, but I don't think that Julius Randle was just like the source of all the Timberwolves problems at the beginning of the season. And I thought that was like pretty unfair. So I've been something of a Julius Randle apologist throughout the season. But at the same time, like I sometimes worry that people think I'm just like a Julius Randle stan because of those things. And like, I recognize like he is a flawed player, but I think he is better than kind of the general public gives him credit for.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a good point on like how he got here. If you like, Jeff Teague's obviously got his own funny, fantastic pod, and I've heard him talk about like he had a similar experience here because he was basically the Rubio replacement, and he knew coming in like they don't like me right off the rip, and yeah. I think a little bit of, I don't know, every time I think about this, I just kind of get frustrated because it's like, yeah, he was obviously the main piece coming back for Kat, but like I thought. People hated Kat when he was here. Like, what the? That's been my whole thing all year. JK tweeted about it. Like, after the Knicks game, the first one, he's like, the same people that are complaining about this trade are the same people just ripping on Kat the entire time. So I do kind of, that's like, I've been surprised on, and I get, it's probably just because he wasn't playing well, but like, I've been surprised on how frustrated people have been with him, just because like, I was under the impression that not everyone, but like you all hated Kat. Not you, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like the average fan base. I know I've talked to Dane, like, and I think he said it on his pod too. Like his high school group chat or his college group chat was always just ripping on Kat. And he said to me like, yeah, they're the exact type. Like they're now like all in on that was a bad trade letting go of Kat. So that's been a weird experience for me.
Yeah, I think it was just a perfect storm of like the nature of the season that they were coming off of. I think people were really wanting to run it back. And then like credit to Kat, Kat for the first 40 games of the season looked like he might be the MVP. And I think people started to kind of even, some of the people that hated him when he was here might have just started to come around on him because he was playing some of the best basketball in his career. And the Wolves were kind of struggling. So,
yeah, it's been incredible how similar Cat's season with the Knicks has been to like his last Tibbs one, or is really the entire Tibbs end. Now he's having the best season of his career, which I always said, like, well, yeah, he's 29. 29-year-old basketball players have the best year of his career. I was always kind of saying, like, he's having a great year. Kudos to him. But, like, it's only, like, a normal step up from what he was doing here.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and it's kind of just the cat thing is basically, like, the Cat conundrum is always, like, when you play him at center, he is going to be just, like, an otherworldly offensive player. But you're seeing it with the Knicks right now. Like, they have all sorts of defensive issues with Cat playing center. And the Wolves found their way into him playing power forward next to Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. And that made him a more effective defender, but did neuter some of his like offensive, like kind of like unicorn-ness a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I think I've asked this for every one of my new guests, so I'll ask it to you. Like, what did you guys think, you and you specifically, but you three, what did you guys think of the Cat trade? Because to me, like, I didn't like it off the rip, but I kind of certainly understood like what they were trying to get to. And weirdly, as the season has gone on, it's made more sense to me, not less. And I think mostly because like my thing has always been, if you were going to not trade him, that it was because you thought you had a championship level team with last year's team plus Dillingham minus.
Yeah.
Like whatever. And as this has played on, regardless, I mean, they've played better. They won 8 in a row before the last two losses. I think it's clear, like, this team is not a championship team. Well, I mean, I will talk about how far we think they can go or whatever, but, like, the reasons they're struggling to me have less to do with Cat and more to do with kind of the rest of the roster. What do you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was... So, you asked how we felt about the trade. Like,
yep.
Jordan obviously hated the trade. Jordan is probably one of the biggest, like, Cat stands in the world. Like, that's his favorite player. He was very vocal about it on Twitter. Like it kind of broke him for a while. I was kind of in the boat of, and I posted like after the trade, I posted like a big long thread kind of like going through all of my thoughts on the Cat trade. And where I basically netted out on it at the time was it kind of felt like neutral value to me. Where like I could understand the vision outside of the obvious, like, the obvious thing is that it's a move for the future to try to retain Naz Reid, Nikhil, you know, make the roster building a little more easy moving forward and not just kind of get into this position where you have just like Rudy, Ant, and Cat eating up all of your cap. And then you're kind of like slowly losing these high level role players that you have. I thought that like the Julius Randle playmaking was going to be like a step up from Cat. I think that's kind of a thing that he always struggled with. And I think early in the season, that was not really the case, but I think in like kind of the win streak, we've seen more of that. Like that's something that Julius Randle is better than Cat at. And I always kind of thought that the like Cat and Ant never really like fully synergized offensively when they were here. Like, it never felt like they were like more than or even equal to the sum of their parts. It always felt like they kind of like took a little bit away from each other. And I think like the same thing happens a little bit with Julius Randle. Like they're still kind of trying to figure out like how to get all of those guys kind of in sync. And so I was like, my thought was like it was neutral value at the time. And because of that, I said I wouldn't have done the trade just given how close to the season it was, like given how high stakes this season was coming off the season that they were at, they had the year before. I didn't think it made a whole lot of sense to like shake everything up like this.
Yeah.
With kind of a, like an admittedly like fragile emotional fan base.
Yeah, that's true. I do. When Luka got traded, I'd remember like comparing that trade to this one. And I do think they're like the Cat trade is similar on like a much, much, much smaller scale. But like there was this feeling of like, if you're going to, this is like the fan part of me that felt this way. Like if you're going to trade, like, is it less fun if it's without Cat? Like this whole time we'd kind of been, well, it was 9 seasons, so it's like damn near a decade that they had this guy. And it was, and obviously I never felt like obviously the Luka trade, when it happened, immediately you're just like, well, that's going to destroy their franchise for like 5-10 years.
It's wild.
And this one, obviously, like I said, much smaller scale, and you have Ant. So no matter, even if they literally traded him for dog crap, like, you would have just been like, okay, well, we still have Ant, so it doesn't, like, we'll figure it out. But I do, like, there's a part of me, like, an interesting fan part. It's just like, yeah, obviously you want to win, and you want your front office, to basically, at least I do, ignore the fans, do what's best. And if that means trading Cat, and obviously they felt like they got a good trade. But, like, the fan part of me is just a little bit like, because I wouldn't say I'm, like, the biggest Cat stan, but, like, he's exactly my age, and, like, I saw him playing college and all this. So part of me is just like, it just kind of sucks. It sucks that he's gone.
Yeah.
And especially, it sucks that he's gone because the trade was mostly about the money. And not even, we'll see, we'll kind of learn if it was about the saving money or the avoiding the cap penalties and all that. But, like, it wasn't even about, like, I'd be curious to say, like, if you got him on Truth Serum, do you think this made your team better? Because to me, the question was no. And I still, even if the question's no, there's still basketball reasons to do the trade, obviously.
Yeah. And I think, I have no insight into this. I'm not in the locker room or talking to any of the front office people or anything like that. I would guess if you gave them Truth Serum, they would say they thought they were going to still be competitive this year, albeit maybe a step back. And I think that they would say that they think this puts them in a position to be better 2, 3, 4 years into the future when Ant is in his prime. And I think that that's, like, entirely possible. They are just, like, in an objectively better financial position now than they were with Cat. Like, we love Naz Reid. If they had not traded Cat, like, they really didn't have any levers to pull to keep Naz.
No.
Outside of, like, dumping Rudy or something like that, or trading Jaden. Like, so the Cat trade plus the Rudy extension, which I have thoughts about the long-term viability of the Rudy extension, but in the short term, it's put them in a financial position to be able to retain Naz, possibly retain Nikhil, get Dante DiVincenzo on a super team-friendly contract, and, like, even, hey, like, maybe trade for Kevin Durant in the offseason. Yeah. Like,
that's going to be kind of the first step of the offseason, is what is the market? Because what's interesting is, like, kind of being on reading some Twitter stuff of Mavs people, it sounded like they're under the impression that Nico was going to trade for Durant and was going to outbid everyone, basically. And that was before Kyrie got hurt. Now, do they still? Because, like, if Dallas wants Kevin Durant, given what their situation is, they're going to outbid the Wolves. Or at least they should, and the Wolves should step back.
Yeah.
But, like,
and I think the tricky part on that is that, like, Durant's going to have, like, some say in that, because he's going to be on an expiring deal. So if Kevin Durant just flat out says, like, I want to play with Anthony Edwards, don't trade for me, Dallas, I don't think they're going to break the bank to trade for him. So we got to see how it plays out. I certainly am not in the business of, like, winning a bidding war for a 38-year-old Kevin Durant. But I think that there are paths to get him. If he really wants to play with Anthony Edwards, which is, I think, entirely possible, I think there's versions of them acquiring him and it not really costing them all that much.
Right. I think the trade I've had in my head is Rudy, Dante, and the Detroit pick. And, like, my question would be, one, do Wolves fans want to do that? And two, is that going to be enough? And I'm almost kind of thinking both answers might be no. I'm not sure giving up both Rudy and maybe, like, Dante in a Durant trade, because, like, I don't, maybe this is just, maybe the Phoenix stuff, like, their whatever they got going on is just, like, dragging him down. I just had, in that playoff series, I was not very impressed by Kevin Durant, and kind of haven't been very impressed with him since his toe was on the line of that second round series against Milwaukee. What was that, 2021?
Absolutely. And yeah, and he's 38 years old with a history of Achilles injuries and ankle stuff. Like, acquiring him would definitely be a risk, but I think it's something that, regardless of what we want, I'm pretty sure Tim Connelly is going to go for it, because when Tim Connelly wants guys, he usually tries pretty hard to get them.
Yep. I will say, Jaden's off the table. You're not doing that. Please.
And it sounds like that was the case at the deadline, too.
Yeah, but the difference there was, like, they had to get under the apron, which would have meant dumping Jaden just to get the, cap room, just to get the apron room to then aggregate contracts. So it wasn't like it.
But it sounds like it sounds like they said Jaden was off the table in all those, trade negotiations. So to me, it sounds like I think that they were just at the deadline, like priming for 100%. Like conversations in the off season. If they were actually trying to acquire him at the deadline without trading Jaden McDaniels, then they were literally proposing trading like the entire team minus Jaden, Rudy, and Ant.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing that they went into that going like, we're not going to trade for Kevin Durant. We're going to poke around here and just see like if we offer some crap deal, are they going to say bleep you and hang up, or are they going to be respectful about it? Maybe that'll tell us where they're at. I think it'll come down to, if Kevin Durant goes, I want to play with Anthony Edwards, then he'll be on the Timberwolves. If he doesn't, I think another team will kind of, they'll be in a, like Dallas will be in a more desperate situation to try to, than the Wolves are. But
I mean, Dallas is going to be in a desperate situation, man. Woof.
Dude. I can't remember. I apologize, whoever this was. But someone was talking to me and they were worried about Dallas tanking and getting the number one pick. And I just kind of went, so what? So what if they get the number one pick? It's like, it's done. Like they've screwed it all up. I was listening to, I forever find this trade fascinating, so I'll talk about it all day. But like, I was listening to Cuban on a comedian's podcast for it. I should know the name of the guy, but I don't. And he was saying that basically when he sold the team, he had an unwritten agreement that he would run the team for a certain amount of point, because he's not the main owner anymore. And he said, they eventually talked me out of me no longer being the point person. And I was just kind of like, I would love, like, talking about Chris, did he actually believe that they were like, it seems incredibly naive to me that another billionaire would come in and just willingly give up control. Like, I would like you, they were always going to take control from him. And that, like, and that always put to risk like this. And it reminds me of like the A-Rod Glenn Taylor stuff, in the sense of like, of course this was going to go bad. Like, of course, like the original agreement made no sense. And it looks like A-Rod and Lurie have won, but like by giving Glenn even a smidge of opportunity, you risk losing the team. And now like the Celtics ownership, apparently like Grossbeck is going to, they basically has the same agreement with the new Celtics owner. And I'm just like, that just seems incredibly naive. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to enter into unwritten contracts with really rich guys.
With $6 billion in the Celtics case team on the line. That's just, that seems wild to me.
Yeah.
All right, we can get back to the Wolves. Let's talk about this Pelicans game tonight. I'm not sure there's a whole lot to talk about, to be honest. I think about this a lot because I went out to the game in DC against the Wizards, which was just like, I was like, there, in theory, there's the game you take the most out of, the number one game, and the game you take the least out of, 82. And I remember watching that game and the Vikings were on that night. There was their playoff game. And I'm like, this Wizards game out here might be game number 82. And now I'm like, if not for the previous losses, I'm like, this game is probably down in the low 70s in terms of games you take anything from.
Yeah, I mean, I think if nothing else, it's just a game that they needed to win.
Yeah, you have to win.
Like, they just kind of needed to get things back on the rails. Like, and even as bad as the Indiana and the first Pelicans game were, losing this one would have been even worse when you consider, like, somehow an even more injury-decimated version of an even worse team than, like, Indiana. I mean, I thought that the ball movement was pretty good. They played, like, pretty well, like, but yeah, like you said, I don't think there's a ton to take out of that. I think that's kind of the point of the season we're at with these with these games against these really terrible teams. It's basically like you either get the job done or it's a disaster. And like the first two games this week were a disaster, and then this one was just kind of getting the job done.
Yeah, and like kind of looking back on it, like that team with Zion, it's a terrible loss. They were like double digit 12 point favorites, but like, yeah, Zion went off and he kept him in the game. So like, it's not the worst loss I've ever seen. Obviously it's awful, but like, it does make sense. Like, and then they take out Zion, and obviously people got their jokes off of the Pelicans got them right where they wanted them. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I get it. But like, their best player is now out. That is very beneficial for the Timberwolves. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had the first 15 minutes were blah, just kind of crap. Although I should move on from this. They started Joe Ingles, and I'll just pull up the Krasinski tweet because he put it best, obviously, about what they were doing there. So yeah, they start Joe Ingles, which obviously I saw it come across the Wolves PR tweet, and I was like, oh well, that's a typo there. I'm not sure why Ingles is in the starting lineup. But then Krasinski comes out with this. Joe Ingles' wife, Renee, and their three kids have stayed at the family home in Orlando all season, which is something Joe said in the preseason, that his family was staying in Orlando, I think mostly because his one son had found a good school, and that mm-hmm. is always tough. Kyle Anderson talked about that when he left, about like that was one worry about leaving Minnesota is because they had found a good school here. They are in town, his family. Son Jacob's autistic. Earlier this week, he had a milestone. He watched an entire NBA game in the arena for the first time. Finch starting Joe so they can see him play, which is just awesome. The skeptic in me, when it was going poorly, a little bit was like, uh-oh, this is not going to look good. But I do think, I mean, just first, like, that's just an awesome, awesome thing to do. Like, more important stuff than basketball, obviously. Families obviously won after, was it, I don't remember which game, his family was in town then, and they all came, were outside the locker room, all came and hugged dad after a game, which was really nice to see. So I think they've been in town for a week or so, probably on spring break, actually. That would make the most sense, wouldn't it? But I do think, like, starting Joe, and it Finch talked about it after the game, I watched the videos, and he was pretty emotional about just kind of the whole thing. And I do think, like, it gave them, like, more energy. They've talked about being tired. We'll talk about, I don't understand why they're tired on a home stretch, but leave that aside. I do think it kind of woke them up a little bit and been like, okay, like, these games matter both outside of the court and with the standing. So I do think, well, obviously, like, the off-court stuff is just fantastic. I do think it kind of helped them on the court,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and I think Finch, like, I think that's, like, one of the things Finch is really good at is that, like, he does a good job, I think, of kind of giving players some leash on things that are important to them. Like, it's a different thing, but, like, he gives Ant a lot of leash when he's, like, chasing 50-point games in garbage time. And I think that's, like, part of the reason that, like, the players respect him so much is that, like, Joe Ingles' family's in town. His son has never watched him playing a game, and he's like, I'm gonna make sure that Joe Ingles gets in the game, because like, Joe Ingles has been like a really big part of this team despite not really playing, like, as in a leadership role. I mean, we make jokes all the time about like the sideline out of bounds stuff, but like, there's games that they wouldn't have won without him. And like, for a veteran player to just like accept that role and not just like kind of bitch and moan that he signed up here probably to have a bigger role than he expected, like, so I think, like, yeah, just like those guys swear by Chris Finch, and I think that's because he does stuff like this for them.
Yeah. And him and Ant, Finch and Ant, clearly have a really good relationship, and that's why, like, obviously there's been, I've said it before, I don't think Finch has done a good job this season. And I've kind of put it as like coaches can have bad seasons just like players can. I don't mean it, like, I think the fire Finch stuff is insane. But I also think, like, he needs to do better in certain, like, he admitted that at the end of the first Pelicans game, he should have played Clark more. He said that pregame. So I think, like, that's important to note. But then I also think, like, he's done a fantastic job with the 8-game win streak and, like, reintegrating people and getting, like, all three guys came back from injury and were right back in the lineup. Obviously, they've had this little losing streak before tonight. But, yeah, I just think it's really cool to do. Unfortunately, he got a couple open shots and couldn't. One of them, like, toilet bowled out. Like, that just stinks.
I wanted those to go down so bad. I thought the floater looked like it was down. Like, on the first possession, that thing looked down.
Yeah. It is funny just to watch, like, because when they had like everyone out, him and Rudy running pick and roll, like that's kind of the only, other than swing open shot for Joe, like that's the only offense they got. Ingles like, got left on him.
Well, like that Wizards game that they lost right. at home, like Joe Ingles was like the hub in clutch time
yeah,
of that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, they closed with him. Yeah. I believe he got interviewed, like he was one of the people chosen for post-game interviews. Like we get three choices, or really the main beat guys get three choices, not me. And I think he was chosen, which he said on a media day, he was like, okay, guys, this is the only time you guys are going to be talking to me. And it was funny. He's like, oh, no, we're on game 50, 60, whatever it was. And here we are talking to Joe. And he's like really funny. He's clearly like he's got the Kyle Anderson seat in the locker room. So like he every time he sees us, he's like, oh, fuck the media. Obviously he's kidding. But like, yeah, Joe has been fun. He's clearly, I mean, I'm sure he wants to play as much as anyone, but like the off the court stuff and him starting tonight obviously is valuable, even if it doesn't seem like it. The other small takeaway from this game, like I said, I'm not sure there was a ton, which is probably for the best. Jalen Clark, like, holy crap, has he been amazing. The 3-point shooting has been, I don't think anyone could have expected that. And he's been really good, just really on offense. Finch said he trusts him implicitly, which is kind of like, oh, maybe you should play him more then. But that aside, he's just been awesome. And just talking to him a little bit, he did not expect this. This was not, I mean, I'm sure he's as confident as anyone, but like what he's blossomed into the second half of the season, I don't think he even himself has expected it.
Yeah, I think the thing with Jalen Clark, like, you know, the defense is obviously going to be there. I think the thing with Jalen Clark on offense is, like, for one thing, like you said, the 3-point shooting has been kind of out of nowhere really good. I mean, I don't have any visions of him, like, upping that volume at any sort of level or being, like, a threat off the dribble. But, like, when he's standing still in the corner, like, I don't think that the stroke looks that bad at it goes in when he shoots it like pretty often. He was 41% going into this game and he was 3 for 3 tonight. So that's going to be up to like 42-43% tomorrow. But I think the thing that about him that has like kind of popped the most is that like, just like how smart he is, like the high basketball IQ. And I think that's how he's able to kind of get the most out of his like limited skill offensively, right? Like he's not going to be like getting to the rim and finishing at a super high level. You don't want him shooting a ton of 3-pointers, or you especially don't want him shooting a bunch of threes like above the break, but he doesn't just stand in the corner. Like he's an active cutter and he attacks at the right spots and like makes the right decisions. And then also just like the sneaky like steals on inbound passes and stuff and like force getting them like 4 or 6 free points every game, basically by just like mm-hmm. being a ball hawk and getting them out in transition. Like you said, I don't think anyone expected Jalen Clark to kind of pop this fast. But right. Yeah, he's been unbelievable.
Yeah. The shot's been the most surprising thing. And it's just so important for him to be able to do that, to get minutes on this specific Wolves roster, because they do play a lot of, Not non-shooters, but certainly, like, Rudy doesn't shoot, obviously. But, like, Julius and Jaden are not necessarily dependable three-point shooters. And, like, games like tonight, like, when Jaden goes 2 of 2 from three and Randall goes 2 of 5, like, they're just going to win those games because mm-hmm. their offense is good enough where, if teams are going to help off anyone, it's going to be those two guys. So if they knock them down, they're pretty much, the Wolves are going to win a lot of those games. And so if, like, in one or two of those players I mentioned are going to be on the court for most or all of the minutes. So if you're another non-shooter, if you're like, and again, like you said, he doesn't need to increase his volume really. Just when the ball gets swung to you and you're open, put it up and make it at a respectable clip. And if the defense closes out on you, what he's been really good at is driving to the lane, not turning it over like a lot of the Wolves players do, and making like the right next play, which is that will, I'm like, this will, I'm not expecting the shot to get much better than it's been, but like that's something that as he plays more in the NBA, you'd expect to just keep getting better.
Yeah. He's fantastic. And then also he's just like super active on like Twitter and stuff. Like,
yeah,
just a super funny, cool guy too.
Yeah, that's he's had a couple of these, like, I'm bored on the plane Q&A, ask me anything. He's now the second person to say that they're trying to get Mike a tech, his first of his career. Ingles said it at Media Day, and now he said it online that they're trying to get Mike a tech. The goal would be to to win a bunch of games, secure a sixth seed for the last game of the season, and Mike can just get a tech for whatever he wants to get and not have it affect the standings or whatever. But
I don't think it's going to happen.
No. Well, I think it was the Indiana game. There was a missed or a tough goaltending call, and Mike said he almost got one there. So I don't think I believe him, because like the thing is, like, Ant obviously has way too many techs. He got suspended for that one game. And it's not just Ant. Like, the refs are probably more likely to give Ant a tech if he's complaining. Like, Mike is, because he's Mike, is going to get an extra leash.
Yeah, so I don't know how much he would have to fly off the handle to get called for one.
There's magic words, obviously, that you can say that'll pick one up real quick. But, like, that's not, I don't see Mike crossing that line. Like, he's going to have to, they don't play the Spurs again, but, like, he's going to have to untuck his jersey in a Spurs game against Chris Paul to get one at this point. Like, I don't know. All right. So we've had fun. Let's talk about the crap of it all. The clutch time issues, again, continue to be an issue. They lose the Indiana game. They lose the Pelicans game. And, their clutch time numbers are horrific. Both of those games, like, each individual game, a lot of times you can point something out. So, like, the Indiana game, I thought, like, they went wild from three. Obi Toppin had, like, one of the greatest clutch performances in the play-by-play era. They, like, statistically, I don't have the tweet pulled up, but, like, the shots he hit, win percentage added or whatever, was insane. And then, obviously, like, a lot of them were open, so, like, that's on the Wolves. And,
yeah, but the, like, the game winner was not open.
No. I think someone banked one in, and I might bank one in too, so I guess those cancel each other out a bit. But, and then the New Orleans game, I just thought, like, they obviously couldn't get stops. Like, there's an element of, like, New Orleans shot better than probably they normally do. And here's, like, my take on it, is the clutch time numbers are terrible. Those need to get it better. But, like, a separate thing is they just need to, like, avoid clutch time. And they did it tonight. They just so rarely do it. When they either go down early, and so they don't, like, the other team's half decent, so they're not going to let you get up by 20 after they're already, like, they're not going to give up a 30-point swing. Or when they do have a lead, like they did the last Pelicans game, they just don't, like, if they had a 14-point lead, get that to 20. So that, like, tonight, halfway through the fourth quarter, Luka Karza can go out there and ball.
Yeah, I think that's true against these bad teams. I think that's, like, when they get to the play-in and the playoffs, like, those are going to be clutch games more often than not. Like, yeah, you just can't really expect them to be able to play and just, like, blow the doors off everyone that they play. Like, especially not if they're going to be getting in as a lower seed. But yeah, I think the clutch time stuff is kind of the story of the season. It's the why they're in the position that they're in. And I see, like, you have in the notes, like what is the reason? And like,
I don't have, I can't figure it out. So if you got something, let me know.
I think the reason is Ant. And, like, Ant does a lot of fantastic things. And, like, I trust that in big games, in play-in games, in playoff games, that Ant is going to, like, rise to the occasion. He has shown that time and time again throughout his career, and he's still very young. But the regular season, like, the clutch time stuff has been an ongoing issue, like, through his whole career. And, like, it's just the process isn't very good. He kind of just goes for those, like, he kind of just tries to throw those haymakers all the time. Like, he tries to take that shot that's going to, like, blow the roof off the place and the game's going to be over at that, when they're in a position where they need to just, like, work for a good look. And the ball gets sticky. He shoots a lot more step backs. He doesn't go to the rim as often. Like, I think those are all kind of, like, factors here. And I think it's something like that he needs to iron out at some point. And he's still very young. But the way I see it really is like one of three things is going to happen. Either he is not going to improve his process and like these clutch time issues are going to plague him his whole career. Maybe he doesn't improve his process and he just like brute force out talents his way to just becoming such an elite shot maker in his prime that it doesn't matter. Or he's going to figure this process stuff out and like that's going to be like the last piece of the puzzle really for him is like if he can become like a really, really effective player in like the fourth quarter of close games, then like that's like the last piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I agree. And my personal stance on that is I am incredibly confident that he is going to figure this out at some point. And I'm not very confident that that point is going to be this year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's even that bad of a thing. He's 23. Like, and I think people say, well, you point to this player. This player was this better at 23. That player was at 22 was doing this or whatever. And that's fine. But this is, like you said, like one of the things, and like this year's two-point shooting has been weirdly terrible, that like is holding him back. And so I just don't think like that's a thing you can fix from one game to the other. I do think like the energy, they keep talking about their energy or their focus or their whatever. I'm not really worried about that in a play-in playoff setting. I just, it's about like, look at last year or even 2 years ago with the Denver series. Like they never had that. I can't recall a game where they were just maybe game five against Dallas, but like that's, I can't remember a game where that was just like, where it felt like one of these tanking team losses where it's just like, they just didn't have it right from the jump. No, Ant's usually been just killer in these games. So that part of it, I don't, but like you said, like they're going to, even if they play fantastic, they're going to be in clutch games against good teams. And can he figure it out? I don't like to win like the championship, figure it out. That's not, I just am not confident this year that is going to happen. I'm confident that a different year will. But like my question is, can they figure it out 30%, which at this point, like they're going to be a good team if they can just not be like one of the worst clutch. Like I'm pretty sure out of any team that's going to make the playoffs or even the play-in, they're the worst clutch team. So like, just like, don't be terrible. is the slogan, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, I think Dane talks about this a lot on his show is it's like the problem feels like it's that Ant doesn't have like reliable spots on the court he can get to like get a bucket. Like you think of all these like clutch time killers, like Chris Paul in his prime, De'Aaron Fox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know where those guys want to get on the floor for their shots in clutch time. Ant is kind of just like, doing all sort, like sometimes he's doing like the crazy drive to the rim. Sometimes he's taking the step back three. Sometimes he's taking like the dribble up momentum three from the top of the key. And all of those are like shots he can make, but none of them are shots that are like, he's going to make this every time.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder about the importance of that. Because I could probably point out people that don't, like, does Ja and Giannis have spots necessarily other than dunking the ball? I guess. I think
Ja and Giannis' spot is just, like, getting to the rim.
Right.
I mean, I think the other thing, too, is, like, I think Ant could probably, and this is a problem not even just in clutch time, but I think it's a bigger issue in clutch time, is that Ant isn't a great player off the ball. And so, like, if Ant could find a way to be impactful without the ball in his hand at the top of the floor, in his hands at the top of the floor, every possession in clutch time, then I think like that would do a world of good too. If Ant could be like, if a couple possessions of clutch time, you could have like Ant in the corner as like a threat to like catch and shoot or cut, and you would trust that he would be like engaged enough to do that and not just kind of taking those plays off, I think that would do a world of good too.
Right. And he talks about his Olympic experience working with Steph. Like that was probably something you could also take away. And he's been a fantastic 3-point shooter. But yeah, like you said, in the clutch, run pin down screens for him, run him off screens, have him run around like Curry. Like and he's obviously a bigger threat at the rim. I do think, like, if he does have a spot, if he does have a spot, it's threes. And so I do think that, like, almost more, like, my, I think it'd be like, the problem with that is, unless you're Steph Curry, which he's done a pretty good impression of him kind of this whole season, but when you're not Steph Curry and your shots, like, this just invariably a high variance thing. And I don't, it'd obviously be wrong to say, like, his struggles in clutch time are just variance. Like, there's obviously more to it than that. But, like, ultimately, like, he has had, like, a few good shots that have rimmed out from three or whatever. And, like, the first Pelicans game they had, like, he was, like, 1-for-9 from three, or 1-for-9 from 2, excuse me. And the one was a breakaway dunk. Like, basically, in the half court, he missed every single one of his two-point shots. And so, if that was just a one-game thing, obviously, you just write that off as a one-game thing. But, like, he's been terrible shooting two-pointers. And it's, like, his mid-range shots are down. So, it's not even, like, they're bad shots. He's just kind of missing layups. I don't even know what to break down there.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on there either. But, once again, like, that's a thing that I'm pretty confident that Ant is not one of the worst two-point shooters in the league. Right. And I did, like, I looked at this, like, a while ago. I don't know what the numbers are now, but if his two-point shooting were to, like, return to just his, like, career averages, he'd be averaging, like, 29 points a game. He'd be, like, second in the league in scoring. Like, so there, on the one hand, it's frustrating, but on the other hand, like, you can view it as, like, some low-hanging fruit where it's, like, okay, he's got this, like, elite three-point shooting that we've just kind of, this found money we've got this season. Like, Ant is, outside of Steph Curry, maybe the best three-point shooter in the NBA now. Like, just not, that's not even a crazy thing to say. Mm-hmm. If he can continue to be that and then return to just his career norms as a two-point shooter, then he's just one of the best. I mean, he's already one of the best scorers in the NBA, but then it's an even, like, a bigger level up. And I don't really think that's too big of an ask. We've seen him do that before for multiple years.
Yeah. And I'm just, as much as, like, I want to criticize him for this or that this year, he's going to figure this stuff out. I'm so incredibly confident. It's just kind of like I said, is it this year or is it next year, 2 years or whatever?
Yeah. I think that's the thing about Ant is he goes into the off season with a goal. And he comes back out of the offseason and he's, like, added this new thing to his game. This year it was the three-point shooting. It was, like, he just kind of has that kind of, like, drive to do those things. And I think sometimes because of how much success he's had so young in his career, we sometimes measure him against guys that are significantly older than him and sometimes forget about the fact that it's just not normal how good he is as, like, a 23, 24-year-old already.
Yep. All right, let's move on to last segment of this one. Just kind of a general, like, standings update, looking forward to where they're at. So they get the win. They're a full game behind Golden State, which is kind of even masking how far behind they are because they don't have the tiebreaker with Golden State. So the game back is two losses, not like a
back of Golden State.
Right. So they got to, like, Golden State has to lose three times to the Wolves zero if they want to pass them up. Now, I did tweet this out. There is a loophole of that. If the Warriors, Wolves, and Clippers are all three tied, the Wolves are atop that tiebreaker. The caveat is if the Lakers fall below all of them, which is probably not going to happen, but just to emphasize how weird the tiebreakers are, if the Lakers fall below, then the Wolves would be last in that tiebreaker because the Warriors would, like, the tiebreaker, they'd have to figure out the division winning tiebreaker first, which would be the Clippers, and then the Warriors and Wolves tiebreaker would go to the Warriors. So that won't happen because the Lakers probably won't fall behind all three of these teams. But
yeah,
that might be a saving grace, honestly, is this three-way tiebreaker with the Warriors and Clippers because if the Wolves, I can see the Wolves catching the Warriors and getting the same record, 48-ish wins, but that's not going to be good enough unless the Clippers can also win 48 games.
Yeah. And so I've kind of stopped paying attention as far as, like, standings watching goes to everyone above sixth. Like, I know, like, a lot of people talk on Twitter about, like, oh, they could catch Memphis or, oh, the Lakers could fall. And I'm like,
I think sometimes we lose track of how few games are actually left. Like, there's only 10 games left, and they've got to make up 4 losses on Memphis. They play Memphis a couple more times. Or do they just play them the one more time? They've played them twice?
Once.
Okay.
They have one more game against Memphis. I think that tiebreaker is settled, too, which is
they've lost to them twice. So for me, it's really going to come down to like where they shake out in like the Golden State, Timberwolves, Clippers. Like, it's three teams for one spot, really, I think. I'm like pretty cynical about their ability to catch the Warriors, but I'm not nearly as cynical about like the general quality of the team, which is a weird place to be. Like, if they can get in to a playoff series, which like they're, even if they're in the play-in, I think they're in like a relatively good spot to do that. Like
I'd be shocked if they miss the playoffs.
Play-in teams. Yeah. Are not like super high quality. And if they can get into a series like against basically anyone other than the Thunder, I know everyone loves to act like talk about how we beat the Thunder twice. I think in a playoff scenario, that's not going to be a great matchup because they're just like significantly better than everybody else in the West. But if they can get into a series against any of these teams ahead of them, I wouldn't necessarily pick them in every one of those series, but there's not a team ahead of them that I think they can't win a series against. And I think there's a lot of teams ahead of them that like on pure talent, they're better than, like Houston. They are a more talented roster than the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets execute at like a much, much higher level than they do. And that's why the Rockets have a way better record than them. Like the Timberwolves are terrible in clutch time. The Rockets are great in clutch time. That's the difference between those two teams. Denver has the best player in the world, and then that roster gets really bad really fast. Like,
they were heavily relying on Russell Westbrook, which is positive and negative.
Yeah, and like Memphis, obviously the clutch time stuff like is kind of a boogeyman in that matchup specifically. But like, we've watched them play Memphis twice this year, and in typical Wolves Memphis fashion, for like 90% of those games, the Wolves look like the better team. And then clutch time starts and Memphis is awesome at that, and the Wolves are terrible at that. And it always kind of like shakes out that way. But in a playoff setting with Ant playing his best, I think that they are a team that's like uniquely positioned to guard Ja really well because of like the number of really good perimeter defenders, like big perimeter defenders they can throw at him, which can give him a lot of trouble. So like
the rebounding would be again the big thing. I mean that matchup, which it doesn't seem like Memphis is gonna kind of get back to the top three, but like that matchup is still like they are both rosters are probably very different than they were, what was that, 3 years ago, and it's just like the still clutch time and rebounding are the issues. So it's like, well, that was the issues when they had D'Lo out there.
so like I said, I'm pretty like bullish on like I think this team is better than their record indicates. Mm-hmm. I think if they can get into a series, I think they're going to at the very least play a competitive series. I don't see them getting like the doors blown off of them by any of these teams in the West. But the concern is that they have like they're in a position right now where unless like kind of a miracle happens and like Steph hurt his back, so maybe there's some regression coming from Golden State, but they're looking like they're one of the hottest teams in the NBA over the last month. If they don't catch Golden State, they're going to be in a scenario where if they just lose two games, they're going to miss the playoffs altogether. And I don't think that would happen. Like, I think they'll be favored against the Clippers, really home or away. Like, I guess maybe not away, but like they've owned the Clippers this season. And like, Sacramento, Dallas, or Phoenix, if that's a team that if they
that's
lose
the bad
to the
vibes
Clippers,
off right there. That, yeah, whoever, like, whatever matchup, Sacramento's going to make it. But like, whether it's Sacramento versus Mavs or Kings, that is just a bad vibes bowl right there.
Yeah. So I don't see. I think they're going to get in, but it's just not as sure. Like, you're a sure thing if you can get up to sixth, and like the play-in, even if you're the best team, is coin flips. And you, it's just like a dangerous place to be. Like, you don't have a ton of room for error. And this is a team that's kind of demonstrated they need a lot of room for error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, my thing has just been like the goal the rest of the season really is to make the playoffs. But for me, it's been like, get into a playoff series you could theoretically win. And I guess they could theoretically, I'm fairly, as far as the Thunder win in like 65 games, as far as 65 win teams go, I'm pretty low on the Thunder, but that's low for a 65 win team. They're still fantastic. If, like, I still think they're going to win the West. I don't know. Every team in the West. My problem with OKC is they don't have a player like, what's it? Their oldest player is, I can't remember his name. Shoot. He's like 24. They don't have anyone. No one's played in a conference finals. They played two playoff series last year. The first one was fake because they played New Orleans without Zion. And then they lost the second one to obviously a Dallas team that also beat the Bulls. So I do think like they could beat them, but obviously, especially in like a first round, everyone's rested. The Wolves theoretically would have played two playing games if they're playing the Thunder. Yeah. That's not great. But if they're 6 or 7, like you said, I'm not necessarily picking them, but like Houston is not a juggernaut as far as 50 win teams go. Denver, I mean, if you only watch Wolves Denver, like their whole roster's like, if I didn't watch other games, I would think Jamal Murray's terrible. I would think MPJ's terrible. And I would think their second best player is Russell Westbrook. So I don't know what's, and as it stands now, probably the two teams I would least want to see, but behind OKC, right now, Lakers and Memphis are set up against each other in 4 or 5. Avoiding those two teams would probably be like Houston 2 or Denver 3 or flip them. Like that's probably the ideal for the Wolves. So it's like, but it's going to come down to one Clippers game potentially if they can't. And the Steph injury is kind of annoying in the sense of he's hurt now while their schedule's soft. They play a bunch of bad teams the next 4 or 5 games, and then their April schedule, kind of similar to the Wolves, is tough. So I'm guessing he'll be back for that. Obviously, if he's not, then that cracks the door wide open. But yeah, it's going to come down to one. The Clippers have a really tough schedule, so I'm fairly confident the Wolves will stay above the Clippers, especially given they have that individual tiebreaker with them. And I don't know, like, ultimately they do have the same number of wins as the Warriors. So, and I agree with you, they're 3 games back, but also like it just takes, the Warriors lost to the Nuggets G League team, just like the Wolves lost to the Pacers G League team. So, yeah, it's still possible to get that 6 seed. If they just would have won, I mean both, but like one of those Pacer or Pelicans game, they'd be just in such a better spot, but they didn't.
Yeah. And that's the spot they find themselves in.
Yeah. But I think we're in agreement. Would you quickly, of the 5, they could still play Memphis or Lakers. Quick ranking of those 5 teams you want to face. So mine would be from, like, I want to face OKC last, then probably the Lakers, just because I'm crabby and the refs thing annoys me. Then Memphis in the middle. Then I'd probably next rather play Denver, and then Houston is probably the team I most want to play. Even though like Denver, they've housed them in the regular season, ultimately it's close with them in Houston, and I just kind of don't want to play the best player in the world. That's kind of where I land.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Yeah, Oklahoma City is the team I would least want to play, because like I said, I just think they are significantly better than all the other teams. I think Memphis is probably the next least likely one, just because of like the Memphis PTSD of it all. Like you said, like even it's a relatively different roster, and they're still dealing with the same problems. And like, I don't know, like it sounds weird, but I don't want to see Brandon Clark in a playoff series. Like, I have nightmares about Brandon Clark pulling down rebounds and hitting those little like 8-foot floaters. And then the Lakers, just because of like the Luka Doncic, LeBron James of it all. Like,
yeah. And I would say their bigs are really bad. Like, it was frustrating to watch like Jackson, like they're playing Jackson Hayes a lot. And so I do wonder, I kind of come down on like next year, they're going to be a problem because they're just going to, their roster holes right now are so incredibly fixable.
Yeah.
They have the hard part done, so they just have to like sign some half decent big and a guard, and they're good to go. But yeah.
Yeah. And then probably Houston. And I think actually my preferred matchup would be Denver, because like until proven otherwise, they just kind of own Denver right now. Like they have nobody has an answer for Nikola Jokic, but the Timberwolves might have the best answer for Nikola Jokic. And I just don't really believe in that roster beyond Nikola Jokic. Like, I know Jamal Murray is like a super historic playoff riser. I don't know. I watch that guy and I just think like, man, it looks like his knees are cooked. Like he can barely move anymore. And like you said, like Michael Porter doesn't like strike the fear of God into me. Like,
he's been bad in Wolves games too. Yeah.
Aaron Gordon, it provides like an interesting matchup, but I think the thing with Denver specifically is like they have one guy that's capable of guarding Ant or Julius.
Yep.
And that's Aaron Gordon, and he can't guard both of them. And like, I know Julius Randle's like playoff history is rough, but I think if you don't, I think part of the reason that his playoff history is rough is because in the playoffs, you're more likely to be playing a team that doesn't have to double you. And if you have to double Julius Randle, I think he's going to be an effective player. And I think Denver is either going to have to double him or guard him with Aaron Gordon. And then it's like Christian Brown guarding Ant. Like, good luck.
Yeah. The teams that give Wolves trouble is when you have a perimeter guy that can guard Ant straight one-on-one, so you don't have to bring a ton of help. Or a big that's sitting by the rim, that like a traditional rim protector. So Nuggets have neither of those. Obviously, like, I do agree with like Denver people that like if you're a casual watcher of Jokic, you think he's a terrible defender. He's not, but he's also not like in that. He's not a traditional rim protector in that sense. And they rely on Westbrook a lot. And the thing with Randle is Wolves fans should know this as well as anyone. People are not quote unquote not playoff players until they're not. And the perfect example of that is Karl Anthony Towns, where the Wolves made the Western Conference Finals, and Kat guarded two of the greatest players in the history of basketball, Kevin Durant and Nikola Jokic, in back-to-back rounds. And in a game seven, saved their ass when their 22-year-old was not playing well, and really the rest of the roster outside of himself and probably like Jaden were not playing well. So, and that is the guy that certainly, and he probably deserved a lot of it, Kat was awful in the playoffs up until that series. So it's all circumstantial. And so Randle hasn't played with another offensive player in the playoffs like Ant, unless I'm mixing up timelines. Maybe he played with Brunson, but in the playoffs, but they were hurt.
Yeah, I don't think he did. Maybe he did 1 year.
Right. So, and it's just like, also, I don't know. We'll probably wrap it up here. We could talk about the East. The Tibbs of it all with New York is just like, stop playing cat and drop. Stop playing them 1,000 minutes. Stop, like, I don't know. Like, it's hard to argue. Like, the Tibbs has turned around the Knicks. Like, they are a solid franchise, but whew, does it feel like they're 1,000 miles away from making the finals?
Tibbs will never learn.
No, he will not. So, and that's ultimately, like, obviously, like, the goal for the Wolves is, like I said, get in the playoffs and get Ant as much playoff experience. Because that's what I kind of said about last year. It stunk that they lost the Dallas series when they could have, how it played out. Obviously, they weren't all that close, but they could have made the finals, obviously. But like that experience and them running out of gas and learning, like that experience to me is that I always say that, that was always going to happen with Ant. Ant, the first time Ant made the conference finals, whatever year it was always going to end like that. Him realizing, okay, this is actually what it takes. And that's true for pretty much every player in NBA history. And so I just want to try to get as many playoff games and rounds as they can to get another one of those moments or one of those light bulbs to go on for that, for 2 years, 3 years down the line, that they can use that. Cause I just think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Do you have anything to plug before we head out?
Follow the pod. Follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at No Pants Crunch is the pod account, at Brandon Beck 4 on Twitter and Blue Sky.
And yeah, listen to the pod. We always say, give us a rating, 5 stars or 1 star. If you're going to say something, stand on it. So, yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. I know you were out in Vegas this morning, and so glad you stayed up late here a little bit with me, to talk about the Wolves, and we'll try to have you on here, at some point soon.
Awesome.
But yeah. Thanks to everyone for listening. Go Wolves.